Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
Hello and welcome. Thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Graywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate, and soon-to-be teacher of the Unnamed Path. And you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. On this podcast, we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors and laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. We're glad you've decided to join us, and we hope you'll be part of the show by calling 347-308-8222. You can hang out in the chat room or drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can also give us a follow on Twitter at walking_theUP, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. Today, I'm kind of flying solo. My regular co-host, Matthew, isn't going to be with us today. He actually has a musical gig that he is going to. So, and actually, he won't be with us for the next podcast either. So I'll be flying solo, kind of, for this month. But I'm very happy to say that we're going to be joined by another Unnamed Path brother. I'm going to be interviewing Brother Tommy Starchild. Let me see. Let me go ahead and bring Tommy on. Oh, wait. Wrong one. Hey, Tommy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Got my tea. I'm all ready to go.
Yes, I have my glass of water. I'm got to keep the keep the phlegm out of the throat. I'm still kind of recovering from a cold from about 2 weeks ago. I don't think I'm contagious at all. It's just a little bit of mucus that is, just won't go away. But yeah. I'm pretty sure everyone loved hearing about that. But how has your month of December been going so far for you, Tommy?
December's been okay. There's after the elections and everything, of course, there seems to be an overall tension that's kind of hanging over everything. And as a worker and I see clients and stuff, I'm kind of experiencing that as well. So trying to do a lot to take care of myself, nurture myself, rest as best I can, give myself some quiet time, working at accepting what is, so that I can figure out my relationship to it. So that's been a lot of the beginning of December.
And my December has been kind of all up in the air. I unfortunately work retail, So I have been running all over the place because it is the holiday season and people are wanting to buy all sorts of crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait for the holidays to be over. Can't wait for this year to be over. This year has been very trying.
Yes, it has. It's been a very challenging year. Many deaths this year. Many
yes.
passings. Lots of change and transition.
Yeah, that's so very true. I have had I have had about 7 people who have been close to me pass away this year.
Yeah.
Come on, 2017, you gotta be better.
Definitely.
Well, you know, Tommy's here today to talk with us a little bit about using the unnamed past as a tool for personal healing. Personal healing is something that we do a lot with in the unnamed path. You know, it goes all into working on our shadow work, which, you know, trying to repair that fractured, what's what I'm wanting to say? That fractured relationship with our shadow, and, you know, just trying to repair ourselves. But before we, you know, get into that, let's find out a little bit more about Tommy. Now, Tommy, you are fairly new initiate into the unnamed path, correct?
Correct. I was initiated in June.
Yes. Now, what was your spiritual background before you got involved in the unnamed path?
Well, I was born and raised Baptist. My family comes from the South, and I'm adopted, so the parents' church arranged for my adoption. So I feel like I was sort of, my family was constructed in the church, and I've always been very spiritual as a very young child, and a big prayer, and the church would have, you know, people in the church would have me pray for them and stuff. But as I got older, feeling a little disillusioned with the church and its doctrine. In 1992, I started studying witchcraft, doing personal study. I was very solitary because I figured I didn't want to sit under the spiritual teachings of another person and get misguided the way I had felt the church wasn't living up to what they were teaching. And from there was a long journey of personal study, and in 1998, I got a formal teacher and started studying the Anderson Fairy Tradition by Victor and Cora Anderson, and was studying under Dominic Amirian. And in 2004, was initiated a priest of Anderson Fairy. And from there, I ended up working. I got a bachelor's in human services, a special emphasis on counseling, and was able to open up my own shop doing spiritual counseling and allowing me to apply a lot of what I've learned through my tradition, through school, through my personal life, and started studying later the fairy seership with Orion Foxwood, an apprentice in the House of Bree. And I guess it was a little over a year ago, had the opportunity to study the unnamed path and be initiated into the unnamed path. So today I work as a modern day conjure man and spirit worker and professional witch at my shop called My Authentic Self, where I do, like I said, spiritual counseling, spell work, cleansings, clearings, Reiki, healing work, energy work of sorts, and kind of the whole thing.
Nice. Now, what made you decide to seek initiation in the Unnamed Path? You know,
well, that was a bit of a complicated journey for a while. I actually met Hyperion through an online group that was Pagan Men for Men, and it was a discussion group quite a few years ago now. Doesn't seem like it was that long, but it's been a while. And it was at the very, very beginnings of him formulating the Unnamed Path, and then had an opportunity to go to some of his workshops at Pantheacon. And then I later got into a relationship with David Shorey, and he's been an initiate of the Unnamed Path, and he was embarking on teaching. And through the course of my relationship with David and a friendship with Eddie, and then his passing, it brought me closer to a lot of the brothers. Mm-hmm. And having this barrier of initiation and myself not being initiated seemed to be an unnatural barrier between me and a relationship that was growing with the brotherhood of the Unnamed Path. And for a while, I didn't feel that that was a good enough reason just to be able to be more closely connected. But as I sat and listened to my spirit and listened to my fairy companions, kind of really worked out what was necessary for wholeness. I had been a member of a gay motorcycle club for many years with my other partner, Virgil, but it's kind of on ice right now and not really doing anything. And the thing that I enjoyed there was the brotherhood with gay men. And it was a piece of my life that was lacking. It was missing. And so I came to the realization that this is something that warms my heart, to have brotherhood with other men who love men, to have that close, intimate relationship. And so that became the primary reason. I discussed that with David, and he felt that that was a very valid reason for joining. And so that became sort of the heartbeat of my interconnectedness with the Unnamed Path.
Awesome. You know, you're very lucky. You're one of the people that, you know, got to meet Hyperion. When I went through my initiation process, I think I'm one of the first ones who was initiated who never got a chance to meet Hyperion. So I'm a little jealous that you got to.
Yeah. Well, there's a funny story. Because back in the days of Pagan Men for Men, I remember Hyperion posting that he was getting this tradition started, that he was feeling called to create this tradition, and he had said something and mentioned Unnamed Path. But the way that I had read the post, I thought he was seeking for the name of the tradition. So I had responded with some dialogue, not really name suggestions, but dialogue to, start a conversation about, you know, ideas. And he wrote back, "No, that is the name." And I was all, "Oops." Yeah, it was kind of foot and mouth with a keyboard added.
Now, what has your journey into the Unnamed Path brotherhood looked like for you? How would you say it's, I guess, has it been considerably different from when you were going through your fairy training?
Well, it's hard for me to say that it was considerably different. Studying Anderson Fairy is a long journey. I was studying, like I said, from formally as a student from 98 to initiation in 2004. But in all honesty, I'm still a student, even though I'm a teacher of that tradition. I'm still a student of that tradition. Unnamed Path, of course of study there was a year. So in some regards, but I already had deep training, so I was able to take it deep for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I like to study spiritual practices that take me inside myself. And that's what I enjoyed about the journey with the Unnamed Path, was that it took me inside myself. I love learning more language. I love learning more concepts and things that help to flesh out even further the inner landscape of not only my own spirit, but as my spirit relates to the underworld, as my spirit relates to the stellar world and surface world, and how I can bridge that. So my journey with the Unnamed Path was a lot of behind-the-scenes conversations with David, fleshing out where there were seeming similarities between Unnamed Path and Fairy. I could definitely hear conversations between Hyperion and Storm Fairy Wolf. I know that, I know Storm very well, and knew Hyperion well enough, and I could see these dialogues and the richness that was coming from it, that he was able to then grow for the Unnamed Path, and so digging my teeth into all of that, the concepts and ideas of the relationships of the deities of the Unnamed Path, and the relationship of the individual with those deities, the relationship of the individual with the underworld, and the deep interconnectedness with going into those dark places of self in order to find wholeness.
I'm sorry. I was soaking it all in. I was like, oh, wait a second. Now it's my turn to talk again. going into our topic for the day, would you say it's true that a healer, in the Unnamed Path, we have our four parts. We have our shamanism, magic and prophecy, death walking, and we have energy healing. We do have a few brothers who do a lot of Reiki and energy work to heal others. But would you say it's true that a healer must learn to heal himself before ministering to others?
My short answer to that is yes. One cannot give that which they do not have. So I think for a healer to truly be able to create safe space for healing to happen, they need to provide that for themselves first. Do they need to be 100% fully healed and enlightened and transcended? No. do they need to be in a process of ongoing healing of self? I believe so. And the reason for that is because if you don't have the tools yourself, it's hard to help others move through the healing that they need to move through. It's important for me as a person that does healing work to understand that I am not the healer. My role and responsibility is to create that safe space so that the individual is able to come into alignment with them, with their self, with their authentic self, to find within them their own inner healer and how they heal themselves. As with Reiki, it's not the practitioner. The practitioner is just the conduit. But the energy reminds the body that it knows how to heal itself. And so that's a philosophy that I really hang strongly to, is that what we do is remind the body it knows how to heal itself. But the only way that we can effectively be that open conduit and move our ego out of the way is to do the healing work ourselves.
In terms of personal healing, do you think the Unnamed Path offers something for gay, bi, trans men? Other paths do not?
That's a bit of a tricky one. When I started reading books on witchcraft and stuff, of course, it was kind of your standard, very, very Wicca, Wiccan influence and things. But I wouldn't say that I studied any sort of Wiccan tradition, because it was just books. And when I started studying fairy, well, Anderson Fairy is very queer. It's just queer in the truest sense of the definition of queer. All of our gods are, they have their primary gender that they're seated in, but they also have their opposing gender and androgen. And so for me, spirituality has never been a gay, straight, bi, trans thing. But I can see how in other practices there is a binary approach. God, goddess, and the individual that's practicing that falls into one or the other of those categories. So what I see with the Unnamed Path is it's another tradition that offers a recognition of the sexual self in a healthy way, in an uplifting way, that's outside of a binary construct that has to be this sort of, for me, a false concept of union of opposites in order for creation, but rather the sexual expression of self and the ecstatic expression of that for creation, and honoring one's own sexual expression as something that is sacred and divine is something that the gay, bi, trans men, men who have sex with men, this is something that we need. Because in a society that believes they have a vote whether or not we can marry, we have not learned yet that our sexual expression is honored, that it's honorable, that it's something that could be sacred, and that there could be a divine quality to that expression. And what I see with the Unnamed Path, with the gods of the Unnamed Path in particular, the dark god and light god, and their union and their transition and that interplay between the two, give us hope as men who have sex with men to honor ourselves fully as sexually expressive beings. And it gives us place in the spiritual cosmos of the larger picture.
Yeah, that that was definitely something that attracted me to the Unnamed Path when I was looking into it. The whole idea that, my union with another man is something sacred, is something worthy of, celebration. So often, like you're saying, we see our sexuality being pushed aside, being told that, it's dirty and whatnot. So, it's a great thing that the Unnamed Path celebrates that sexuality.
Right. And we live in a culture that defines us by our sexual activity, but a culture also that denigrates sex. Mm-hmm. It considers it, something dirty or something, that it's not something that is honored and respected, although it uses sex to sell absolutely everything, but you're just not supposed to enjoy it. And then we get defined by it. And so it really creates a conflicted message. I think it's for men who have sex with men, I think this is a great source of the woundedness that we often experience in our relationship with self is when our sexual expression is so outside the norm, and even the norm is not supposed to be, revered. It's something that's dirty anyway. We really have a hard time wrapping our brains around a healthy way of perceiving self and one's own mm-hmm. sexual identity. For me, as a gay man, the labels are nothing but descriptors that help describe like who or what or where I am to someone in a conversation. Mm-hmm. But there's so much more beyond myself, how I engage the outside world outside of myself, how I love, how I engage my relationships and partners. And to be able to have this area elevated to a place of sacredness is something that I think more need to do. I think we're taught too many times that sex is a means to an end. Sex is for procreation, or no sex until the first date, or no sex until marriage. Sex leads to something else. It creates a life, or it defines a relationship. And to be able to practice a spiritual focus and know the sex itself, honoring that ecstatic experience in and of itself is sacred. And I find that to be esteem building. It grows healthy levels of self-esteem and perspective of self.
Mm. Now, would you be willing to give us an example of a way that the unnamed path has helped you in healing of yourself?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, brotherhood was a big draw for me. Brotherhood with other men who love men. We live in a society that doesn't really honor men in general, having intimate relationships with one another, even, in a non-sexual context, but just being able to be vulnerable with each other. I think our messages that we get as young boys, all of us, whether we're men who have sex with men or straight identified or whatever, our messages that we get as a boy is that we're supposed to be masculine. But it's my opinion that none of us know what that means, but we all know that we fall short of it. And so it creates a competitiveness among men competing for this prize of this masculine, ideal. But none of us know what it is, and the only way that we know that we're striving for it is if we're competing, who's more masculine, who's less masculine, and all this kind of stuff. So to be able to come into a space where brotherhood is honored, that a space that allows vulnerability among men in a space that's for male-identified space, I think is tremendously healing in that regard, tremendously healing on a spiritual level, to break through these messages that have done nothing but cause hurt and suffering. And for me, it's not just, among men. If you want to elevate society, if you want, move past discrimination and misogyny, this message that we teach boys about masculinity, I think, is right at the heart of these patriarchal concepts that lead to this competitive nature of who's the biggest, the baddest, the strongest, the Marlboro Man, ideal of masculinity. And so if we can come together and hug one another, if we can come together and be vulnerable with one another, if we can come together and breathe together and cry together, it heals those wounds. And for me, that's something that is invaluable. And it's not a healing that takes place once. It becomes something that I yearn for, to come together with the brothers in the unnamed path, to reunite, to reconnect in those love bonds that have been created, to feed one another spiritually and emotionally. So for me, it's been this deeper journey in expression of self as self relates to a community of men.
Yeah, for me, I definitely agree with everything you just said.
I've thought about this for a while.
Yeah, when I was going through the process myself, that whole aspect of this fractured masculinity definitely was something that I guess I started paying attention more to as I was going through the process. I feel like I was aware of it when I was younger and going through college and, trying to absorb it, but it didn't really soak in until I started going through my process a couple years ago. And, it just kind of, when I started, seeing all these things that I was like, okay, why am I letting, this define who I am as a man? How does this make me more masculine? How does this make me more feminine? How does, I kind of identify as, I fall in between. I'm neither, really masculine, and I'm not extremely feminine. I feel like I have a nice balance in between, and that works for me. And I've also come to realize that, everyone's going to have their own different views of, what it means to be a man. And, as long as we kind of, in my opinion, as long as we kind of respect and not try to impose our view on other people, it helps us to kind of repair a little bit of that fractured masculinity that we have been so ingrained to, believe and accept as we were, we're growing up.
Correct. I agree completely. And, if people are really asking me, like, how I identify, other fits well for me. But that, I'm 5 foot, 4 3/4 or 5 foot 3 3/4, not quite 5'4". So, I've been a short guy all my life. The bar of masculinity has always been something, that's been taken away from me. Not big enough. My voice wasn't deep enough. But, all these things that we do.
Yeah.
So these last, 10 plus years, have been embracing those qualities of myself more deeply. But in the process, I've been working toward a different perspective energetically into the masculine paradigm, and redefining what masculinity means for me, and defining masculinity as being comfortable in one's own skin, being able to stand in the space that I occupy and to be able to own that, not the space that anybody else occupies, but to be myself as fully expressed as I can be, as authentically as I can be, in that given moment, and to be comfortable in my own skin. And to really embrace that to be my expression of what masculinity means to me, because it helps me get of that competitive quality where I'm not tall enough, I'm not this, or, you know, I may in this circumstance be, you know, more feminine here, or I might be more masculine there. It's a complicated dance, and I'm also a sister of perpetual indulgence, and it's a work that I bring to my expression of a sister is this conflict between these things, these masculine and feminine identifiers, such as clothing and things. And I like to show a lot of tattoos and all this stuff and have all this, you know, gender fuck stuff going on to rattle the psyche and say, you know, if a skirt is enough to diminish my level of masculinity, I wasn't very masculine to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
If makeup is going to reduce that masculine quota somehow, then I really didn't have it. So just to shake the psyche a bit, to rattle, you know, what we believe we've got to live up to, and say that we can express this fully and that we can be, we can accept masculine and feminine within ourselves and still hold on to a masculine paradigm that's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
The important part for me is finding what's healthy. For the first Stone and Sting that the Unnamed Path Brothers were hosting, I put together a workshop for that, and it was the first workshop I put together focused on an audience of men who love men. And
mm-hmm.
that one was called The Warrior and the Healer, where I was looking at the archetypes of warrior and healer and what these two mean. And the spirit really took hold of that workshop. And one of the things that came out of it is that warrior and healer are really creation destruction. It's blood and plant. It's life and regeneration. And there's a third component that is, you know, exists between these two, and that's compassion. And I see warrior and healer as two sides of the same coin, but the coin itself being compassion. And I think as men, if we can embrace our ability to be vulnerable and to have compassion, we can temper those internal struggles of that warrior-healer part. It's not one or the other. In order to heal, you have to know how to wound. You have to know how the wound got there to be able to go in and heal it. It's, you know, to curse. You know, to heal, you need to know how to curse. These concepts of having the integrated relationship, it's the implementation of compassion that tempers those, that brings those into harmony, so they're not conflicting forces. So that if one needs to, with compassion, engage, say, a person or situation in something that may, in fact, cause, you know, maybe an emotional wound or something, but it's with all the love in your heart in order to help bring potential growth or healing in the situation, then that's what, you know, we can step in and do that. I've looked at and read many stories of Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva of compassion, and there's a fierce quality to compassion as it relates to Kuan Yin that, like, I'm seeing it, but I can't put my finger on it. And in some work I was doing with Kali, there was this wonderful quote that I read that Kali, that's slaying the demons of mankind, which are the complexes of the ego self. And there was this one quote where it's wielding the spear of compassion, piercing the ego, liberating truth. And I find with the Unnamed Path that, you know, there's a warrior quality that wielding that spear of compassion as we come together in brotherhood, as we come together as men who love men, that allow us through our shadow work, that allow us through our energy healing, through our, you know, shamanic practice, magic and prophecy, all of these things that allow us to move beyond the complexes of our ego self, to pierce that ego, that allows truth to become liberated. It's not an action to liberate, but by piercing the ego, truth can then liberate itself, and we can be who we truly are and stand in the face of a brother, because it's one thing to be yourself isolated and alone. It's another thing to risk being true to yourself in the face of a mirror of another brother that is reflecting that back to you and you reflecting that back to them.
Would you say that men who love men have a common wound?
I would say yes. I used to work for the Gay Men's Health Program here in San Diego. We would facilitate a relationship and empowerment retreat about anywhere between 4 and 6 times a year. And under the guise of HIV and STD prevention education, but it was, you know, how to grow and build healthy relationships. And over the course of that, I kind of pulled that, I wrote a lot of that curriculum and facilitated quite a few of the groups and stuff. In the course of that, the common thread that I found is it wasn't a lack of information that we're putting people in this case at, you know, health risk. It was self-esteem. It was an issue of low self-esteem. And if I pull back and see where's that coming from, I think, you know, there's the potential to have this overall sense of abandonment. I think humanity in general suffers from an abandonment wound, whether it's we feel abandoned by Creator, you know, it's the kicked out of Eden part, born of sin, all those things. But as gay men, we're abandoned by society. Many have been abandoned by our family. My family had turned their back on me when I got outed. Some people have had that experience, or some people it's just maybe they've been denied employment or fired because they were abandoned, or denied housing. I experienced years ago when I was living in Phoenix where an apartment complex wouldn't rent to us because we were gay men. And so all of these experiences set us separate from. And that feeling of being separate from, not allowed to be engaged as part of the whole, reinforces, or it opens that abandonment wound, keeps it going. It develops a sense of self that not quite worthy enough. And so intellectually we can feel worthy. Intellectually we can feel like we're a part of, or we've got our group and we're, you know, we're part of this group and I feel connected. But this deep-seated belief about self often still lingers. And so it's been my experience that many men who love men still have that woundedness that comes from being who they are, and who they are is has not been deemed okay by friends, family, loved ones, you know, religious organizations, society as a whole, laws, you know, all of these things that say we're not quite as good as everybody else. And that's a deep wound. That's a deep wound. That recognition of it is the first step. But it's one that often needs, you know, long-term nurturing. It needs compassion, not you know, sort of sweeping it under the rug or freaking out like crazy because I am frustrated and I try to fix the external. When it's the internal, you know, oftentimes that, you know, that little boy inside that just wants to be loved and to be able to turn to that and offer that and say, you know, you are okay, that you are normal.
You know, you said one of the first steps is acknowledging, you know, that kind of spiritual, social, emotional wound. What would you say are some other tools, specifically that you've come across in the Unnamed Path that you are able to talk about, that Men Who Love Men could use, you know, to, you know, facilitate in this personal healing of themselves?
I might be a little sick and twisted on this, but I really love shadow work.
shadow work.
It's been a deep part of my life for many, many years. I'm also 20 years clean from meth use and done 12-step programs and had, you know, a great sponsor that took what I noticed with the steps, what I noticed in reading practices of shamanism, what I noticed in my study of Anderson Ferry, the study of Unnamed Path, is they all have something in common, and it's that shadow work. In the steps, it's the fourth and fifth step, that searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself, and then sharing that with another person. You know, it's the Jungian approach to looking at the shadow. These aren't negative parts of ourselves. They're just parts that we choose not to shine the light on. But they're parts that make us whole. And being able to go into those murky depths of self and finding what's there, seeing what's there, embracing what's there with love and compassion, bringing it into yourself to be whole. Because when we don't do that work, then when situations arise and we just sort of have these knee-jerk responses, often those responses are these uncontrolled responses that come out from our shadow self. And after, oh, why did I do that? Or why did I say that? Like, and we think if we go into the shadow work that we're going to unleash that and we're going to be that forever. But in fact, by embracing that, embracing our shadow self, these qualities of ourself that we choose not to look at, we're actually able to regain control because we gain choice. So when a situation happens, we can choose to respond from an aspect of our shadow self, or we can choose to respond differently. And it's through that choice that we get liberation. And you see this throughout many stories and mythos. Like I mentioned Kali earlier, where she slays the demons of mankind. And these are the demons that all the other gods of the Hindu pantheon were unable to defeat themselves. And it took Kali wielding all the you know, condensed powers of all the gods to go in and slay these complexes of humanity, the ego self. And one of them, every time she cut it down, once, you know, a drop of blood hit the ground, another demon would spring up. And this illustrates that as we go into this work and we think we clear away a complex of our ego self, a drop of blood drops on the ground and we find another expression of the ego self springs up. We're like, you know, how do I get through this? And she picks that demon up and she eats him and swallows him. And to me, that's the shadow work. You've got to take this in. You've got to consume it and allow it to nurture you rather than combat you, rather than having it a foe that's fighting against you. It's taking this into yourself and something that's been this demon that's been attacking you and causing conflict in your life can then with compassion become an ally that faces outward as a protector and an ally for yourself, so it's not tearing you apart, but then can be sort of the faces of the of your spiritual gargoyles that you know, protect you and help you as a whole person to move through the cosmos of humanity.
You know, one of my favorite tools that Hyperion talked about in one of the first podcasts of the Unnamed Path podcast, and something that I still continue to use, and it's kind of one of the steps leading up to shadow work, is the reviewing and peeling process.
Yeah.
When you were talking about those knee-jerk reactions, taking a step back and be like, okay, wait a minute, why am I having such a strong reaction to this? And peeling
right.
it back, peeling it back to, it has something to do with, I didn't get enough attention when I did this when I was younger, or, this happened to me at this past part of my life, and that's why I'm, having this strong reaction now.
Right.
And
yeah,
I strongly teach,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, nothing is, when we had a Sphinx on the podcast, I think that was last episode, one of the things he was talking about is, this process with the shadow, it is a continuous thing, and, what's the word I'm looking for? Regularly, you don't have to constantly, every day be, having to do a little bit of shadow, but if you're consistently, like every, taking a day each week or a day every couple of weeks, but making sure you keep on that schedule and going back and, sitting with your shadow and, talking with your shadow, working on the issues that it is bringing up, and slowly and repairing that relationship over time, it fixes that relationship and helps bring it in to make you more whole.
Right. Yeah, this is work that I live and breathe. I mean, spirituality, my practice and everything is my day-to-day life. And some of that comes from, my experience with the 12 steps and putting that in a daily practice. But I teach my students constantly, know your motive, know your motive, know your motive. And it comes from that, like, peeling and revealing part. To quote Orion Foxwood, you've got to heal you to reveal you. And so you got to peel back these layers and see what's, where did that come from? Where did that come from? I often will do this thing of, what does that feel like? What does it mean to do that? What does that feel like? In order to keep going deeper, to peel back those layers and see what's lying underneath all of that, to see where it's coming from, in order to develop a process of discerning your motive, because I believe if we know our motive, we can do anything, absolutely anything we want. Because by consciously knowing your motive, you assume responsibility. And if, as long as we're willing to take responsibility for our actions and choices, then we can really do anything that we wish. It doesn't mean that we're going to not have consequences. Part of that responsibility is accepting that, with everything there are consequences, and am I willing to assume those consequences, or do I want to redesign what I want to do? And by being able to do that peeling, revealing, by looking at the shadows that lie beneath, by being able to connect with what is my true motive behind all of this, I'm able to connect to myself in a more authentic nature, to be more true to myself. So if my motive today is, I'm not you know, maybe I'm having one of my fat days. Or I look in the mirror, I'm like, oh, none of my clothes fit. I feel bloated. I'm not cute.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Leo, I'm not cute. It's not a good day for me. And so I'm like, so I will usually on those days, I'll usually take a little bit more care in how I want to dress that day. I'll often choose to move, literally physically move a little bit more slowly, a little more consciously, because there's my motive is I'm not feeling good about myself. So I'm going to take some extra steps to maybe dress a little nicer that day, not for other people, not to get the validation, but to nurture myself and to be able to have an authentic relationship behind the choices that I'm doing rather than looking in the mirror and saying to myself in my own head, oh, look, you look horrible today. Look how fat you are and you look all bloated. And I just, you know, I'm going to dress up and try to look real cute. And I go out and nobody says anything. And then I feel devastated. Nobody noticed or, you know, because my Leo nature was thriving off the need for that validation, and I didn't get it. As opposed to taking that approach, I can go and go, wait a minute, I'm going to look good for myself today because I'm not feeling so cute today. So I want to feel good about how I look and go out into the world and feel good with my expression of myself. So it's just an example of how I try to, you know, implement knowing your motive on anything. Sometimes it's emotions just spring up and I don't feel like dealing with them right now. And so maybe, you know, I'll choose something that's a distraction so I don't have to feel those emotions for right now. But it's a conscious choice. I'm choosing to do this thing that is a distraction because I don't want to feel these emotions right now, but I will have to address them later. But I will address them on my own schedule. Not when they just randomly pop up. I will go at them and see what's at the heart of those emotions when I'm at a stronger place to go look at them. And that's not like years from now. It's usually just a day or two.
Mm. Yeah, no, setting stuff aside for too long, it's going to come back and bite you even harder.
Right.
You know, a lot of people who, do shadow work to, help better themselves tend to get, a little frustrated because they feel like, they'll address something and then a little bit later it'll come back and they're like, well, I already, messed with this. Why is it coming back?
Right.
What suggestions do you have for someone who is looking to make a
clean break?
Yeah.
Well, it's like the demon that Kali, cuts down and a drop of blood hits the ground and another one springs up. So understanding that it is an ongoing process. It is something that you live and breathe, and maybe not on a daily basis are you doing, a compare and contrast list or, some sort of, writing of feeling and revealing what's going on. But at least an inner dialogue of searching to be true with oneself. And for me, that kind of will help places because, the ego self is tricky. All of my work centers around the ego self and getting into right relationship with self, what I call the spirit and the authentic self. I use those two terms interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a healthy quality to the ego self. It's part of what makes us self-identified as a physical human being. But mm-hmm. Our ego gets... the ego self is basically the sum of the who we think we are based on our life experience. And so I like to look at this kind of work as when I say polishing the mirror. If you think of the old, like silver mirrors, and you had to polish them and polish them and polish them to get a good, clean, clear reflection of yourself. That little scratch on that silver mirror, that no matter how much you polish it, just doesn't quite come out. Or maybe it's, you know, a dent that gets in there. Nothing you can do is going to remove that dent, but it's going to obscure the reflection just a little bit. But it's that quality, it's that little scratch, that dent that makes you uniquely who you are. They're not flaws. They're part of who you are in your individual expression. So we don't get rid of the ego self entirely, but we get to appreciate and value the unique qualities that it brings to who we are. And, you know, the work on these issues, you know, cycles back around, goes deeper and deeper each time. But ideally, in sort of the Zen approach, is the objective observer. So when it comes back around, you're able to pull back into that space of the objective observer and go, it's like an old friend coming to visit. You might not like when they come to visit, but, you know, it's an old friend and you're familiar. You're like, oh, okay, I remember you. Yeah, you're still there. Okay, I'm going to offer you love and compassion. You know, oftentimes we think we have to fix it, make it go away. But if we recognize it and we bring it in and say, you're not wrong. There's nothing that has to be fixed. It's okay. It's part of what makes me me. Then we can actually nurture that back into part of ourselves, and we find that they come around less often.
You know, when you were giving the what am I trying to say? When you were talking about how, you know, that little scratch in the mirror, I had something pop in my head, and I don't know if it's true. It was a meme or something that I would see every so often online. It would talk about now I'm like completely forgetting it. It was like the pottery that would break, but they would fix it with gold. Each time it would break, they would just fix it again with gold, because the cracks are, you know, show that it has experience, that you're I'm completely butchering it, but basically, you know, each crack is a story, and, you know, it's part of what makes you valuable.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that all that is experiencing what it's like to be you, Michael, or experiencing what it's like to be me, extending a part of itself out, not separating it from, but extending a part of itself out to experience what it's like to be Tommy Starchild. And there's no way that I can do Tommy Starchild incorrectly. Because my spirit comes from the source, and that, so all of my experience, there's no way that I can do Tommy Starchild wrong. And if I can get out of my own way and embrace that, well, then I have a much more integrated relationship with self and the divine. What happens is the ego self can move in and forget that I have that integrated relationship and think that I am the end-all, be-all of what Tommy Starchild is. And that there's this linear process to my existence, and I start and stop at the limitations of my physical body. And then I can get caught up in my day-to-day experiences and get caught up in, externals defining who and what I am. And that can really trigger, the wounds, the flaws, those cracks of gold that I carry. you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, I'm adopted. So I've had a long-standing broken record of I don't fit in, I don't belong, you know, I'm, you know, somehow just not quite a part of. And I get to see that now as like, okay, that may have stemmed from my adoption, which happened at birth, so I can't change that. But now I can just kind of nod my head and go, okay, yeah, that's a deep childhood message for me that I can nod my head to. And what can I do? I can engage in and pass like the unnamed path and connect with brotherhood that helped to give compassion to that part of myself that tends to often feel like I just don't belong, I just don't fit in.
Well, I just realized what time it was. You know, an hour always goes by so fast whenever you're having a really good conversation.
It does.
What are some last minute tips or suggestions you would give to someone who is wanting to use the unnamed path or any spiritual path as a tool for personal healing?
The first thing that came to mind, the first thing that popped in was don't walk the path alone.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of great things that we can do out there, in a solitary relationship. But to me, spirituality is a co-creative, integrative relationship. And so don't walk it alone. If you don't have another human being, walk it with spirit or a plant spirit or a nature, something, get alone. Ideally, don't walk it alone. Have another human there because it's human nature that we mirror one another. And so we'll get to the deeper qualities of self when we have another person that's able to mirror us back to ourself and we're able to mirror ourselves back to them. But I think where we're at today and present day is everyone's retreating to their corners, retreating to their places of isolation and looking out at other, you know, whatever other is, as sources of pain or conflict or control over their life. And I think to break past that, to move out of those corners, is to connect. I think it's an interconnectedness that is going to help foster healing right now, but healing in humanity. And so anyone seeking any spiritual pathedness, what I love about the brotherhood is definitely that interconnectedness and the fact that everyone has a slightly different expression of their work in the unnamed path. And it's all honored. And through each one of those expressions, I can deepen my relationship with unnamed path. I can deepen my relationship with my expression of the unnamed path by seeing how others are doing it. And it creates a more rich and vibrant experience. You know, we could boil things down and say, oh, you know, well, white is the presence of all colors. So, you know, okay, well, I'll just, you know, paint with white, but art's not very attractive if it's just white. And you're like, but everything is there. All the colors are there. We need all the colors of the rainbow to make something of beauty. And you get that by the more, energy that you can infuse into your spiritual practice, be it people, spirits, deities, herbs, healing practices, all of those things give richness and life to one's spiritual practice.
Well, thank you, Tommy. You know, where if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
I can be found on Facebook, Tommy, TOMMIE, Star Child, one word. I also have a website, myauthenticself.com. And I have an Etsy shop that is also, it's Etsy, My Authentic Self. Facebook is usually the easiest. And I'm always open to friend requests. I usually check what community people are coming from to see sort of where the relationship lies. But myauthenticself.com, Facebook Tommy Starchild, or my Etsy shop. All good places to find me.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you, Tommy, for being on the show. And
thank you,
everyone, for... And thank you, everyone, for listening. Once again, I'm Michael Graywolf, and you've been listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. You know, before we go, I think I am going to play a song, and then that will be it for the day. I'm going to play S.J. Tucker, Cheshire Kitten, because, you know, we're all a little mad sometimes, so...
Many blessings, brother.
Many blessings.
I grew up seeing things a little differently, appearing, disappearing, hardly innocent, nor tied down to the ground. I learned to roll and tumble with the punches, glory in my stripes and spots, walk by invisible and never make a sound. But heavy is the crown that's always hidden. Tender is the heart you never see. Hard and fast shines the grin that we flash, but there's a vulnerable stripe or two on me. Maybe any place outside of Wonderland is not for me, my friend, if I leave my grin behind. Remind me that we're all mad here, and it's okay. Sun up, sun down, the shadows hide me down in Wonderland, Wonderland. Nobody knows the way, but if you find it in your dreams, you can find it at your day job, somewhere south of hell. Take the path to left or right with just your gut to guide you. The story is not for anyone else to tell. And hear everybody loud and clear, but the truth comes down in riddles that are safe enough to share. That's how it is in songs you see, and stripes always looked good on me, whether or not I'm really there. Heavy is the burden of the wise ones, when no one understands a word they say. The Jabberwock never bothered anyone, but nobody believes him to this day. Grin behind, remind me that we're all mad here, and it's okay. Sun up, sun down, the shadows find me out in Wonderland, Wonderland. Nobody knows the way, but if you find it in your dreams, you can find it at your day job, somewhere south of hell. Take the path to left or right with just a gut to guide you. The story is not for anyone else. For his lovely daughter moon, you can't forsake the journey for the safety of your room until you learn your lesson. Well, is it the stripes or the spots you see? Was it hard for diamonds, babe, they brought you here to me? Darling, you know better than to trust a pack of cards. What have we learned? The world is never as mad as it could be. Never as mad as it could be. Da 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 da
I leave my grin behind, remind me that we're all mad here, and it's okay. If I leave my grin behind, remind me that we're all mad here, and it's okay. If I leave my grin behind, remind me that we're all mad here, and it's okay.
That was S.J. Tucker, Chester Kitten. Again, thank you everyone for listening today. Thank you again to Brother Tommy Starchild. And again, you've been listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can reach us at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at walking_theUP. Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. Again, our next show is going to be actually Christmas Eve. Woo! And it's going to be me and a returning guest, our brother Cliff Camacho, is going to be on, and we're going to be talking about, we as men who love men, what does it mean for us to use our capacity to love in our life, in our magic? What does that mean for each one of us individually? So, hope you'll tune in and have a blessed day.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's Anyone, Anytime, Anywhere education system is available any place on Earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years, and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.